So today we will stop talking about registration, and what we will be talking about is some topic that also uses ideas of registration, but also different ideas, to come up with essentially an interventional 4D reconstruction. And the topic that we'll be talking about will be cardiovascular reconstruction, so reconstructions of the heart and the vasculature of the heart. Very well. So reconstruction was quite heavily introduced in last semester in diagnostic medical image processing. But in case you haven't attended it, we will do a short recap of how you do a reconstruction. But we will stay at a very superficial level here. So we won't discuss details of filtering and so on. But let's do a first refresher of reconstructions. So in angiography, 3D angiography, we already have such reconstructions since the 90s. And when we're talking about 3D angiography, what we are essentially referring to is a reconstruction that is performed first developed in the 90s and since 1919 really in clinical use. And this is to be meant to be used directly in the interventional room. So you typically have a special system like this one. So this is a C-arm system, and there you do the acquisition in the interventional room, and you do reconstruction, and in the end you get a 3D image of the vasculature. And you can do that pretty well if you have flat panel detectors. What you may want to do is a digital subtraction angiography. So you actually perform two scans. You do one scan without contrast agent and one scan with contrast agent, and then you subtract the two, and only the contrast agent remains. And this allows you to get quite nice images of the vasculature. And since you have these flat panel detectors, they have like 30 by 40 centimeters in height and width, you can reconstruct objects that are pretty much fits an entire skull, an entire head. And this is pretty nice. So if you do neuro interventions, and you want to go with a catheter through the vasculature, you can do such a 3D image once, so you only inject contrast agent once, and then you can use this 3D image as overlay to navigate through the vessels, even if you change the angulation. So even if you change the 3D projection or the projection of your C-arm system, so you rotate or move a bit, but you can still overlay this 3D image to guide you through the vessels. So this is very nice, but as you might remember, one inherent assumption that you have in 3D reconstruction is that all views are taken of a static object. And now if you have the skull and the vessels in the skull, even if you go in with a catheter, there's only slight deformations of these vessels. And usually you do the contrast agent injection, so during the reconstruction itself, you will have a more or less static image. You also have to keep in mind that the rotation of the C-arm system, this is in an interventional room, so there's all kinds of stuff around, and the typical CT gantry rotates 4 times a second. Now, if you have a heavy X-ray tube and this pretty large flat panel detector, and you rotate at this speed, it's open. So if there's somebody in close to it, or if there's some kind of machinery close to it, it will get hit. And if you move really quickly, it will accelerate items. So there's a high risk of moving too fast. So if you move too fast, you could hurt somebody. So this is the reason why those systems rotate at a much slower speed. So a fast rotation is between 2 to 4 seconds for 200 degrees. And it can take up to 20 seconds for one acquisition. So you have pretty slow rotation speeds here. And in neuro, this is still okay. So in neuro, if you have a patient and he's lying on the table and he's more or less attached to the table, as long as he's not suffering from an acute stroke event where he might move or things like that, then you can still get decent reconstructions. But if you have something that inherently moves, like the heart, then you run into trouble. So your heart beats 60 times a minute, And if you are in an interventional situation, there may also be acute stress events where the heart can beat considerably faster. So sometimes you have 120 beats per minute that the heart is beating, actually. So and if you take, if you need 4 seconds for the rotation, you have several heartbeats in this single rotation. So you need to do something about it. Generally, for the reconstruction, how it works is we're using filtered back projection. We're using filtered back projection, of course, because it's fast. So we need the image quickly. So we do a filtering of the image with the RAM filter, and then you do a back projection. Now let's consider first what a projection does. So a projection takes an element of the volume, a voxel, and this is the source location. And what it does is it projects it here onto the screen, and this is the measured value. And this way of projection, then if you do this projection, then you can get a 3D point X, and the reconstruction at X is then the projection of X onto the detector. And then you access the pixel where this point is projected to, and you apply some filtering. And you do that for every of your n projections. So I is the projection index. So you have to back project, and then you can also assign a weight. So this WIX is a kind of distance weight. So you weigh with the distance between the pixel and the actual. I think it's the pixel and the source position that you use as distance weight. And then you essentially have a large summation. So you project your point onto 2D, then you access that element in that projection, so it's already a filtered projection, then you multiply with the distance weight, and then you sum everything up. So in short, you could write this as some function HFDK. So this is the FDK value that is expressed by the distance weight and the projection, and then it's essentially a long sum. And you have a sum over all projections, and you have to repeat this for every element in the volume. So this gives you also the complexity of the algorithm. Good, so this is essentially the reconstruction, but everything needs to be static. As soon as you have motion, this won't work anymore. And you can also think back to the projection models by Dürer. They more or less formulated also the same projection problem. And you can also visualize this as a kind of gantry and source path. So what you then do is you rotate around the entire patient, and by that you get views from every angle. And by summing over all the angles of the filtered projections, you then get the reconstructed slice or the reconstructed voxel. Okay, this is a close-up of the actual detector and the tube. So you can see this, actually the tube is back here in the arm, and the part that you see here, this is actually just the collimator. So the collimator is just used for forming the beam such that it only irradiates the field of view, only the part that you're interested in, so most likely the patient. And actually the tube, the X-ray tube, is back here integrated into the arm. And then it has a small window where the X-rays come out and they go through the collimator. And the collimator can be rotated. And you can also rotate the detector here such that you can also acquire at slant angles. So you see that the entire gantry here is at a 45 degree angle. And this is, in this particular system, this is a Seago, which has a six-axis robot attached here. And by doing so, you have more flexibility. So you might want to use certain angulations here, and then you have a free rotating collimator and a detector such that you can still align it to a landscape or portrait orientation. Okay, I also have a video later that will show the actual acquisition. Actually, the motion, so what you want to do is you want to rotate with your arm around the patient, and you can already see what I'm doing with my arm, so this is actually a quite complex motion. It's quite interesting to see it. Okay, so far so good. This will work for static objects. Now we want to reconstruct the heart. So what can we do? Well, let's think about it a bit. So let's first look a bit at projection images. So this is the kind of projection image that you typically get. And you can see different, well, if you look very closely, you can see different structures highlighted here. And RCA is a right coronary artery, LCA is a left coronary artery, and CS is the coronary sinus. These images are now quite small, and if you have some time, you can try to figure out where the structure is. So for example, you can see this contrast agent here. You see that? There's a bit of contrast agent. Then do you see this black structure here in the background? Yeah? So this is, what's this? Yeah, it's the liver. Yeah. And then you have this kind of ball-like structure. Do you know what that is? That's the heart, exactly. And then you have this strange structure with stripes. That's the spine, exactly. And here is a catheter and some contrast agent flowing. Yeah. And here's the same, here's the spine. Here you see the heart, so here we already have some contrast in the heart. And then you see some catheters. And here you see more catheters and essentially also the coronary sinus catheter here. Okay, so just to get you a small impression of how the image quality looks that we're dealing with. So this is a quite complex object also that we're trying to reconstruct. And another thing that's happening is all of this is truncated, by the way. So typically you want to have the entire object in the field of view. But here, you never have the entire object in the field of view. So you're only focusing the beam onto the heart because you only want to reconstruct the heart. So if you do that, and if you do it well, you can get reconstructions like the one down here. But you have to use some tricks in order to be able to reconstruct the heart. So a setting is within the procedure, and you have selective injection of contrast agent. So you are reconstructing high contrast structures. So you're already with a catheter in the heart vessels, and you're about to, for example, opening a stenosis. So sometimes you have a narrowing of a vessel. So the vessel is narrowed because there is some plug or because there is some inflammation which makes the vessel smaller in diameter. And what you want to do is you want to go in with a catheter, and then this has a balloon that you can blow up. And this way you can dilute the vessel, so you make the diameter bigger. And sometimes what people do is they put in a small mesh that will keep the diameter of the vessel fixed. And this is called a stent. So most of the time when you're interested in coronary imaging, people want to go into the vessel to dilute it in order to restore blood flow to the heart muscle. So the coronary arteries are perfusing the heart muscle, and if you have a narrowing in the arteries, then you will get at some point a malfunction of the heart muscle, and it will not be able to pump really well. And if you do that, then you can restore heart function. So what you want to get is actually 3D, or even better 4D, information about the arterial and venous cardiovascular systems, because you want to assess the blood flow in the heart muscles, and you want to use that to guide your intervention. And if you have restored the flow, then you probably have a better perfusion of your heart muscle. Now, there are several applications. So, for example, if you had accurate anatomic knowledge about the blood flow, then you could also assess diameters of vessels. So for stenting, for example, you can also assess angles, and you could even compute velocities. So if you do a computational fluid dynamics simulation, or if you measure the contrast flow directly, then you can also do assumptions about the actual flow velocity. If you are planning an intervention, you might be interested about the best angles to look at the operational site. So you want to pre-compute how you have to align your C-arm system such that you can optimally perform your intervention. And you could also do overlays, as I mentioned before. So if you had a 4D model of a, of the heart, then you could also use this for overlay to save contrast agent. But this is a really tough one. So a 4D overlay of the heart is not that easy. And we won't be able to do that within 90 minutes of lecture. Very well. So you can also use this for guidance. Generally, what you will need some hint on the motion. So you have to figure out how the heart is moving. And there's several ways how to do that. So for example, you can use an ECG signal. And then you start detecting the spikes here, and here, and here. And then you can assign relative heart phase. So from the ECG, you can essentially derive the relative motion state of the heart. Or what also happens, sometimes this, in these 20-second scans, the patient is not able to hold his breath. So there's some additional, not only cardiac motion, but also breathing motion. And then the entire heart moves. So you also want to be able to compensate for that. And what you could do then is you could, for example, track the respiratory motion. And this is an example where you use a depth camera. And you essentially fit two regression planes, one here and one here. And with that, you can get a real-time motion signal of the breathing. So you can differentiate diaphragm breathing from the chest breathing. Okay, so we need to figure out somehow how the motion is what the motion is doing. And a very popular way in cardiac interventions is ECG. And this leads us to ECG-gated C-arm CT. Now, this has been proposed by Günter Laurich and Rebecca Farrick. These are also two longtime collaborators of our lab. So Günter Laurich is at Siemens here in Forchheim. Rebecca Farrick is at Stanford, and she is heading a 3D angiography lab. And they came up with a quite nice idea to perform ECG-gated reconstruction. And what they do is they acquire the ECG, and then they essentially virtually freeze the heart motion to perform a reconstruction. So it will be a quasi-static object. And the idea is to take projections from the same heart state and then reconstruct a virtually frozen heart state. And because you approximately know that the heart is beating periodic, so it will beat again, then you can wait until you're in the next heart state and then reconstruct. And what you will be doing is, because a single sweep won't be enough to acquire all the data, you will be rotating back and forth. So you rotate back and forth. And by doing so, you acquire a lot of projection data. And at the same time, you also acquire the heart state using the ECG. And then you can use the ECG to map it to a relative heart position between 0 and 100%. So the heart cycle will now run from 0 to 100%. And then the next cycle will come with 0 to 100%. And at the same time, we will be rotating back and forth with our C-arm system. And if you do that, you can essentially derive a plot that looks like this. So this is a forward sweep, and these are now multiple heartbeats. So you can see this is the heartbeat, and this is the projection angle. And if you continuously acquire, so you're continuously rotating, which means that your projection angle will be continuously increasing. And your heart phase will wrap. So your heart phase will increase from 0 to 1 to 100%, and then it will start at 0 again. And now if you start acquiring data doing this, what you will essentially get are points on these lines. So you're acquiring within the heartbeat, and this is the projection angle, and the projection angle ranges from 0 to pi plus 2 gamma, where gamma is the half fan angle. So this is a short scan. So what will happen is, now I'm increasing the projection angle and at the same time the heart is beating. So what you see is that we will follow this line. So heart is beating, this is the first beat, then we have maybe a quarter rotation, and then we have the next beat, we have another quarter rotation, next beat, another quarter rotation, and next beat, another quarter rotation, and it's not entirely a quarter, it's slightly less, so we still need to go up to here, and at the end of our sweep, we will have acquired all this data on the line. Now, if you think about what you need for reconstruction, what you would like to have is the heart motion frozen. So what you would like to have is essentially a non-moving heart and all the data on this line here. So if I move the cursor back here, so what you would like to have is a frozen heart, and then we move along this line, and what we had acquired would be all angles at the same heart phase. But what we acquired with our single scan here is now a lot of heart phases, so all the heart phases distributed over all angles. So if we now would reconstruct only this heart phase and we add some margin, so we are not reconstructing an infinitely small point, but we are actually allowing some margin. This will bring us those dashed lines. So you see those dashed lines here and the dashed lines here. This means that if we want to acquire data, only the strong back line here, only this data is suitable for our reconstruction, which means that in the white areas here, we are still missing angles. Yeah? So we would still have to acquire this, 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 and this. So, well, what can we do? Well, the nice thing is we have a periodic motion. So if we scan again, then we will be able to do the same again, but with a slight shift. So what we do now is, you remember we rotated up here, what we do now is we do a second rotation, and in the second rotation we are rotating backwards, and what we will do is we will acquire this, 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 and this line. So we are rotating back, which means we are starting here, and then we are following this zigzag line. Sorry, this is the heart phase. No, we are rotating back, which would mean that we are... But the heart phase still needs to go up. No, this is right. So we'll be acquiring this. Sorry, we'll be acquiring this, 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 and this line. So now the slope is exactly inverted. So it's not zigzag, but we're going up this line here, then we're going up this line here, and every time we reach the top here, we're jumping back down here. So you see this pattern? And what we have generated now is, if we want to reconstruct this heart phase, we now have additionally these lines, and these lines, and these lines. So we can already reconstruct quite a bit here. And, well, what can we do? We wait for a specific point in time, and then we do a third sweep, and if we align it correctly, we can go back forth again, and then we would acquire this line, this line, this line, and now I'm always crossing in the red area. So if I have the right timing, then with my forward and backward sweeps, I can exactly sample the entire projection angle here in a certain heart phase. And what I end up with is I have this zigzag, and then I'm jumping here, but it doesn't matter, because I jump from here to here. I essentially assume that the entire period here, the heart is almost in the same state. So you can do that in a very slow heart phase. You may know that the heart has several phases, and there's fast ones, and then almost stable ones. So if you place this in the heart phase that is more or less stable, and this is also which we show here, then you are able to acquire more or less static projection data within this part. Okay. So this is quite interesting. because now we have acquired all the angles that we need for reconstruction. And what we essentially did is we virtually froze the object because we know that the hard state is repeating. So this is actually a clinical product. And if you just had a single sweep, your data sufficiency condition would be violated. So you need multiple sweeps. And if you only do so you need multiple sweeps, and you need an ECG signal to trigger this. But this also has some drawbacks, because you essentially assume that the heart is always moving in a periodic fashion, or at least that between two spikes in the ECG, you have a linear motion. This is the inherent assumption here. So this may be not so good, but you can actually use it to reconstruct, and you get reconstructions from it. So saying that, we could also think about different ways of determining the current heart state. And what actually Christopher Rokohl came up with is something that he called image-based gating. And what he is doing, he's using similarities between projection images to assess the actual heart state. So if you look at a typical sinogram without motion, you end up with something like this. And if there is motion, what will happen is that these nice sinusoids will be deteriorated. And this is now some kind of irregular pattern that is introduced, and it will result in that two neighboring images have a higher difference than two neighboring images in the left graph. So if you take two lines from here, two neighboring lines, and two neighboring lines from here, they end up in a quite high difference. So now you could say what you have in between the projection images is you have the sinogram motion, so this is the motion that you expect because of rotation, and then you have additional motion that is caused by the cardiac motion. And this means now if I take two adjacent projection images and subtract them, if they are taken from two different heart phases, then the difference will be higher, and if they are from two similar heart phases, the difference will not be that high. And what he proposed to do is some kind of image-based derivation of the heart state. And what you then do is you perform several sweeps, and if you have two neighboring angles, so this is the rotation angle, so the step of the projections. So if you have 200 projections on 200 degrees, it's 1 degree. So you take the projection at projection angle alpha, and then you add 1 degree, and then there are several candidates that could be similar. And one is taken, so let's say we know the ground truth, which we actually don't, but let's say we have heart phase 73%, and 70%, and there's only 1 degree difference in the rotation, you get a pretty empty image. And now let's say you have heart phase 23%, so a heart phase that is quite different, then the change in angulation doesn't cause such a high change, but most of the change in the image here will be caused by the cardiac motion. So you can use this as a hint for picking the right sequence of images. And now what you do is you align all your sweeps in a big matrix, and you say this is your source, the source is here, and this is the target, and you only allow steps in positive angular direction. And what you do is you compare every projection image of sweep 1 in angulation alpha with every projection image in the other sweeps at alpha plus 1 degree. And this way, you can come up with a cost for every of those steps. And what you then do in order to get the right sequence of projections for reconstruction is you do a shortest path search. So you seek the path through this graph with the lowest cost. And if you do that, you implicitly get one projection from every projection angle, and you choose them in a way such that you have the minimal additional motion in between. So the assumption here is that you will have the baseline motion anyway, because all of them are taken 1 degree apart. But the additional motion is caused by the heart motion, and this causes additional cost. And this way, you search the path through these, through all of your images, and you get the shortest path as the set of images that you want to reconstruct. So you can use Dijkstra, for example, to do this image-based gating. And then you go through here. So let's say you start with sweep one, and then you compare it. This is the next image, and this is the next image, and so on. This is the last image. And now you have one path through here, and then you have one path through here, and this will be the set of projection images that you use for reconstruction. So one problem is paths with minimal jumps are actually preferred. So if you have, it might happen that you just select all of the subsequent images because you simply have a continuous motion in here. So the heart is moving gradually, and you have the gradual motion of the C-arm system. And then it might happen that you just acquire this set of projection images because there's some correlation between the two motions. And in this kind of way of searching, you will not end up, so you will not make moves that will cause high jumps. Yeah? Because if you try to jump from sweep one to sweep two, there is always a difference in between the heart phases, and this will cause a jump. So what we can do is, you can inform this with the mean heart rate. So if you have the average heart rate over your motion, then you know that you have to have a jump at certain points. And then you can finally derive this image-based method. So if you only do it image-based without knowing the mean heart rate, then you will probably select just all the images from the same sweep. Good, and you can do this, and we had a study with nine pigs, and this was acquired at Stanford. 6 sweeps, 191 projection images in 4 seconds, and the detector matrix was 620 by 480, and the heart rates were between 75-95 beats per minute. And here you can see a reconstruction, and this is the reconstruction from the ECG gating. And we picked fixed ECG 75% and the respective band around it. So also a full projection set for this reconstruction. And this is the image-based reconstruction. And you can see there is some slight differences. So you can see it here in this region. So there's even some blurring here. This appears a bit sharper. But both of them lead to quite nice image results. If you have stable heart rates, the ECG gating seems to work better. Then we had a rating of these images, and the end-diastolic ECG gating at 75% heart rate had 2.5, so a pretty high score, and the image-based gating was slightly worse. Then you can also look at images where you had higher heart rates, and there you can see that the ECG gating leads to artifact here, and if you do the image-based one, you can get much nicer image results. So here this is this wave, and here this is for sure artificial, and you get a much nicer homogeneous impression of the contrast flow here. So there's cases with irregular heart rates where we had better results with the image-based method. Well, because our ECG, so if your ECG assumption is well met, then it works very well. But if you have deviations from this assumption in the heartbeat, then the image-based method was better. Okay, some conclusions. Okay, this is all very nice. But there's a couple of drawbacks. For example, we are not using all of the projections. So remember, we do all of these sweeps. We do 6 sweeps. And in the end, from the 6 sweeps, we subsample only one set of projections. So 5 out of 6 projections, we just throw away. And we reconstruct a single heart phase. So this is not using all of the data. And what you want, if you do the acquisition, then of course you want to use all of the data. And if you have an irregular heartbeat, it's much more difficult. So maybe there's better versions, better ideas to come up with this. And we can stay a bit with the ECG gating, and you can also think about gating the about weighting the ECG window. So for example, you have faster and slower heart rates. And what you can do is, if you have heart rates, phases of the heart that move faster and slower, then you could say, well, in a slower phase, I could allow more information from the neighboring projection angles because they are more likely to show the same heart state. And in the faster heart phases, I will only use information very closely related to that. And this is better than using wrong information from a different heart state because it will give you streaks. So what we do is we try to use a kind of temporal additional smoothing. And we do that by introducing, so what you previously did is we had a 0-1 weighting function. So we had either take the image or don't take the image. And what we are now doing is we are introducing a kind of cosine weighting. So if the heart phase doesn't match that well, then we still allow some of the information to come in. So previously what we did is we just did this path search, and this essentially says, okay, use this projection, so use these projections, don't use these projections. And we do that until we have one complete set of projections. But we can also use some kind of gating window, and by assigning this gating window to, let's say, 75% heart rate, then we can select a particular heart state. And depending on the heart state, we can make the window more broad or more narrow, and this will influence our image quality. So what we do is we introduce a weighting function lambda, and this now has parameters that we abbreviate with S, but these parameters are essentially the width of the window and some factor here, alpha. And then you can and if you in the right heart state, you select it, and otherwise you just cancel it out. Okay. And what you can now do is you can now reconstruct, and we will use exactly the same reconstruction formula as before. So this is our weighted distance weighted projection data, and now we just multiply with this weight, and this weight allows us to pick in a smooth way pick out a particular heart state, and then we have some not just weighted, some gated FDK reconstruction. So this is GFDK, this is the gated FDK reconstruction, which is only a sum over all angles. So what you could now do is, you could try to, because now we could set a weight heuristically, and we say, okay, we choose the window more narrow, or we choose it broader. But what you could do now is, you could optimize those window sizes with respect to some kind of objective function. And what do we do is, well, we render the currently reconstructed volume, so we forward project it, then we compare the two, so we compare the current reconstruction with the current projection image, and we sum up over the entire domain of U, so over all pixels. So we use the entire difference between two the artificially rendered projection image R and the true projection image P, which will give us some weight Q. So Q is the difference between the rendered and the projected, the actual projection. And then you can compute with respect to your window widths, you can compute this objective function, which is then just the sum over all those weighted differences for every angle, and multiplied with our weight. And then you have a objective function which is dependent on your parameters, and you optimize it such that you get the optimal weight. Good. And now you have an optimization problem, which is the minimization of this objective function with respect to the parameter set, and this will give you the optimal set of parameters. Yeah, and then of course you can play with the similarity metrics, so you can use normalized cross-correlation, root mean square errors, normalized mutual information, and so on. And of course you can also play with the projectors, because So let's say what we currently have is just the sum as the projector. So this is a virtually rendered radiograph. But you could also use a maximum intensity projection. Because we are aiming most of the time at high contrast reconstructions, so you may be only interested in voxels that have high contrast. So if you're interested in a reconstruction of the coronary arteries, then you're only interested in high contrast pixels. And in this case, you could use a maximum intensity projection. Instead of a sum, you choose the maximum. And then you can optimize it with a grid search. You sample over all the possible parameters, and then you do a local gradient descent. Very well. And if you do that, this is a coronary reconstruction, so only the coronary arteries. And this is a standard ECG gating. If you neglect the entire motion, you get this. So if you assume all projections to be taken of a static object, you get just everything blurred. So there's no more coronary arteries. So ECG is definitely better. But now if you optimize this weight, then you can get a much better reconstruction, as you see on the right-hand side. Yeah, and you can also show that if you use normalized cross-correlation and maximum intensity projections, you get pretty high correlations. So this is a simulation study. Good. So this leads us then to some kind of ECG-gated motion compensation. And now the idea is, with ECG gating, I can reconstruct one heart phase. So one heart phase at 0%, at 25%, at 50%, at 75%, and then I have four reconstructions of different heart phases. So I can use gating to select a subset. What I can now do is, I can continue and reconstruct all this data set, and now I can estimate that deformation, and now we're using non-rigid registration, between two neighboring states, and this will give us a motion field, how the motion is performed between one state to the other state. And now with the knowledge of this motion, I can actually deform my volume. So this is the deformed volume and the next deformed volume and so on. And I can deform my volume in such a way that they all end up in the same heart state. So I can choose a reference state, 25%, and then do a reference reconstruction at 75%. And then I deform the reference reconstruction at 75% and add it back to the volume of 25%, and I get a much better signal-to-noise ratio. But what I can actually do is not just adding them up and average them, but I can also embed this into the actual reconstruction algorithm. And then you end up with a ECG-gated motion-compensated reconstruction. And this, essentially, what it will do is, this is the motion, this is the motion path. So what you, so one way how you could interpret this is, if you are doing a projection, you're no longer projecting on straight lines, but you are more or less projecting on curved lines. Yeah? So you can, because your volume is deformed between the different time states, what will happen is that you can essentially, if you have the position over the voxel, it will be on a non-static point in the volume. So what you can do now in order to create our artificial projection is what you need to do is you have to pick your volume, you have to invert the motion field, and then if you do a maximum intensity projection, you just take the maximum over this path. So this way you can then create projections into a quasi-static time frame. Good. And of course, you can then also put in your motion-compensated reconstruction into an optimization problem, and you end up with a very similar formulation of the problem. But now also the parametrization, so the entire motion is parametrized. So your set of parameters is then also containing the entire motion field. And here we have a B-spline motion field, and you have to estimate all the spline parameters at the same time. And you can do that, and if you compare the standard ECG-gated version with a motion compensated reconstruction where you really estimate the spline motion in between the time frames, then you get a much nicer reconstruction result. And then you can even embed this into a kind of iterative update step. So what you do is you measure projections, you create an initial ECG reconstruction, then you segment, essentially you pick a threshold to segment the vessels, and then you have a sparse reference image. Then you project your sparse reference image, and you estimate a motion field, then project, and then you iteratively update the motion field and the projection and the reconstruction in one big optimization problem. Yeah? And then you have an iterative motion compensated reconstruction. So this is the big picture. And it took Christopher about 2 years to implement the entire algorithm, and it shows that it actually works. And if you speed this up, you can actually get this at a runtime. So this, remember, this reconstruction results, they are from almost 5 years ago, and you could do this in 4 minutes 5 years ago. So it's you can do much more stuff by now, and you can get already pretty decent clinical results. So these are coronary sinus reconstructions, and this is coronary artery reconstructions down here. Good. Summary. Well, ECG gating is good as long as you have a regular heart phase. If you don't have periodic motion, you may want to update your estimations during the reconstruction process, and this will lead to a full 4D reconstruction. Okay, so far, so good. And what I'm going to show you now is something that we only came up this year with. So this is latest work by Oliver Taubmann. And he has been, so you see these methods that I showed right now, they work pretty well for these coronary reconstructions because this is a very sparse object. Yeah? So there's not too many pixels that you actually have to reconstruct. But we've been improving this in order to also get full 4D reconstructions of the heart. And so now are finally the videos that I promised. So this is an acquisition where you can see on the left-hand side this robotic system and somebody operating on the robotic system. And on the right-hand side, you can see a full acquisition. And here you can see this very nice motion, how the actual arm is rotating back and forth to acquire a heart acquisition. Okay, and here the goal is to assess the left ventricle of the heart. So what you have is a sweep with about 14.5 seconds duration, and you end up in about 400 projection images. So we have more projection images now, but also a longer rotation. And if you have something like 115 beats per minute, you end up with about 27 heartbeats. And this means that from your 400 projections, you only end up with about 27 projections per heart phase. And this nice thing is this is a single sweep protocol. So we're no longer dealing with a multi-sweep protocol, but we are now using a single sweep. So in the previous ones, you still had this problem with the multi-sweeps and not all data was really used. And we are now down to one sweep, 14.5 seconds. And 381 projections, and in every heart phase, so we end up with about 27 views per phase. Good. Systemic contrast injection, 91 milliliters, and this is quite nice. So actually, the contrast injection. So if you want to image the left ventricle, it's pretty large. And it's not that easy to develop a contrast protocol that you get for 14 seconds a uniform contrast in your left ventricle because it's beating and you don't want it to be not... So you want it to be homogeneous for 14.5 seconds. So you have to experiment a lot with how to inject the contrast agent such that the contrast agent distribution stays uniform because otherwise you get artifacts all over the place. And again, we do ECG gating, and this will give us a first initial reconstruction. And then we have a lot of artifacts, and because we do ECG gating, they're actually not that much from the motion, but they're from the view undersampling. So we have too few projections, only 27 projections per view, and this will give really bad reconstructions. And what we do now is we do an initial image reconstruction, then we estimate the motion, and then we compensate the motion. So we need two iterations for our reconstruction. So we try to get, so with the 27 views, you get some intermediate image, and this intermediate image has still a lot of artifacts, but it turns out that even though those images have artifacts, you are able to estimate a motion prior from the different states. And with that motion prior, you can then perform a motion compensated reconstruction with more views, and then you get much better image quality. So this is a kind of bootstrapping approach where you try to pull yourself out of misery by using some tricks. And it actually works. So this is the kind of intermediate reconstruction that I'm talking about. This is a 27 view reconstruction, and now we display all the hard states, so you really see the motion. And this is, if you just performed ECG gating, you end up with the image on the top right. And there's things in here. You have a catheter, and the catheter moves, and the catheter is a high contrast object, so it will create streaks. So first thing you do is you do a high density object removal. So you kick out catheters from your projection images and just interpolate them away, and this already helps with reducing the streaks. And then you can do a specialized streak reduction. So there's the so-called McKinnon-Bates algorithm. We won't look into too much detail, so we won't explain it here, but the reference is given here. And with that, you can reduce the streaking. And if you do some denoising, for example, with a joint bilateral filter, where we use the sum over all hard states as the guidance image, then you can already end up with some image that looks like this. You see the image here? And this is the kind of image that we want to work with. And what you see is, over time, there's a lot of flickering. So, and some of this flickering is caused by actual motion. So if you look here, this guy here, this is caused by motion. And the nice thing is this motion is correlated with your heartbeat. And then you have some kind of appearing motion, which is a change in illumination. You see all these changes here, they are uncorrelated to the heartbeat. And what do? You do temporal smoothing that is informed of your heart rate. So you try to smooth out every motion that is not correlated with the heart rate. And this is then heart rate informed image smoothing. And you can also see the temporal inconsistencies here. So you can already quite well see this motion here. So this is the contrast flow in the left ventricle. And you see the aorta here. And then you see all this flickering around here. This is a kind of a random texture change. And what we will do now is we will do a temporal frequency analysis. And using the temporal frequency information, we can smooth out everything that doesn't move in the same frequency as the heart rate, because our contrast flow motion will be at the same frequency as the heart rate. And how do we deal with it? Well, what we'll be doing, well, there's full iterative approaches, and they are really time consuming, so you have to do many iterations, and you have temporal total variation and so on. So there's a lot of computational performance that you will do. But what we will do is adaptive Gaussian smoothing based on a motion map. So we will derive a motion map from the motion information. And then we do bilateral smoothing within the iterative estimation and compensation. So this is, well, we may have one or two iteration steps, but this is essentially an analytic reconstruction algorithm, which means this is very fast. So we can do this reconstruction pretty fast. And if you do a full iterative reconstruction, you're still in the ballpark of minutes, even in highly optimized graphics code. And if you do the things here, then you can get your reconstructions really quickly. So this is the heart rate informed 3D motion detection for adaptive temporal smoothing. And The paper just appeared 2 weeks ago on Fully 3D, and the paper is called Keeping the Pace, Heart Rate Informed 3D Motion Detection for Adaptive Temporal Smoothing. And what we now do is we will perform a Gaussian smoothing, but we will have some kind of adaptive sigma that we will derive from a motion map. So we will smooth more if there is not as much heart rate correlated motion, and we will smooth less if the motion in the area is correlated to the heart rate. So, yeah. And the key idea is projections show heart motion, but the artifact motion doesn't correlate with it. And you have a rather high temporal resolution and many individual heartbeats. So you can derive a frequency rate. So you know the frequency of your heart rate because you have some ECG information. And with that, you can do essentially a frequency analysis. And what we do is you take a voxel. This is the voxel of your volume. This is X. This is the voxel. And then you forward project it over all of your projections. So this is the projections, and this is the voxel. And if you write up this information as a kind of signal, then you get this. So this is the projection of the same voxel onto our detector. And what you can see now is that there is a periodic kind of component. You see this here. This is correlated with the heartbeat. And then there's some non-periodic stuff. For example, you see this decay here. This is actually, this decay here is related to the structure. So your torso is, from this view, it's not as thick as from this view. So you see this low frequency trend here. And the low frequency trend in the graph, this guy here, comes from the actual object shape, the entire object shape. And then you have this motion here, which is caused by the heartbeat. Now you can do an FFT, and what you get is a very, very nice peak, and this is the heart rate. And this is the kind of heart rate correlated motion. And then you can assess the height of this peak, and this one says that the information at this voxel is very highly associated with the actual heart rate. So we assume that at this voxel position, there's something happening that has to do with the heart rate. And if you do that, you can compute a weight for every voxel, and then you can derive those maps. And what you see here, that essentially in the blue area, you have more or less a slight weighting, and in the red areas, you have a very strong weight. And this is now cropped at a threshold. At a threshold, you say, okay, this is more or less the static area. So for every voxel, you get a weight. And with this weight, you can control the smoothing. And the higher, the more reddish the structure is here, the less you apply temporal smoothing. And the bluer, the more temporal smoothing you apply. And if you do that, and then you have a median filter, blur filter, and so on. But let's skip those details. But what you can very nicely see is if you adopt that, and now we only smooth in the area where we expect heart motion at all. So in the outer part, we assume everything is static and replace it with the mean image, because there is no motion except for the heart motion in this area. And what you can see is that here, if you do temporal smoothing, you get this wobbling effect. And if you do this heart rate informed temporal smoothing, you get a much nicer image representation. So here, this is physiologically much more plausible than what you previously had. And this is 10 heart phases in the cardiac cycle. And here you can see that the catheters, they're back in here, they stay much nicer, and you have clearly the heart motion. And this is a different view of the contrast agent flow, and also in these areas here, you can see that the spine is wobbling around here, and it's not as much wobbling here. There's still some problems here towards the ribs, but this image is much more stable and much more nicer because we use this heart rate informed smoothing. Yeah. and also another view through this. So this is an axis that is a cut through the heart that is along the long axis of the heart. Yeah, also here in the two areas, you can very much appreciate the change. And this is a volume rendering. Good, and then you can even improve on this, because now what we did is essentially one iteration, and we can now also iterate this process. So we do this motion compensation and deformation and iterate through it. And then we can run a couple of these iterations. Let's not talk about all the details, and but let's look at a couple of images if you do that. This is the regular motion compensation. And now if you run three iterations of this, you can get image results like this. And this is the same with patient data. And you can appreciate that the right version with three iterations turns out to be much nicer. So, yeah. Okay, good. Do you have any questions so far? Yes?
So did I get it right? The images we've seen lost, they still come from 27 projections?
No. They come from the entire set of projections, but you deform them. So you use all of the projections, but you deform it to the current state. And then you perform 10 reconstructions with a different reference state. So we're using all of the data for every state, but we're using the motion as a prior to deform the not matching projections into the same state.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is using all projections for all faces. And because you know the motion quite accurately, then you are able to reconstruct the motion and the slice image. And if you have the motion right, then you get the slice image right. And if you have the slice images right, you get the motion right. And then you iterate this for three times. But in between, we do a lot of bilateral smoothing and a lot of tricks. And then you end up with quite decent. By the way, the top ones are phantom studies. So this is the X-cut. And yeah, the lower one is, of course, a real patient image. And this is pretty fast. It's not a full iterative method, but it has three iterations. By the way, these results are unpublished. This will appear on MIKAI in October. So this with the application of three iterations and the much nicer image results will appear. So if you get the chance to go to the Oktoberfest, stay a bit longer, and go to MIKAI, then you can also see this nice result. Well, more questions? If that is not the case, then we meet again on July 16th, 12:15, and we will go through a long summary and some evaluation results. Thank you.